This is a Hog Sports Network podcast.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. I am your host, Anthony Christensen, joined by Blake Sutton behind the scenes and, of course, Bob Holt to my right. Here with you today to talk about the Arkansas men's basketball season and kind of look ahead to the offseason and what's ahead. But first, I guess, guys, how are we doing today? Blake, how are you?
Hey, I can't complain. I spent probably 5 hours agonizing over my bracket yesterday, and it was funny. I think in the morning I had Baylor in the Final Four, and then by the afternoon I had them losing in the second round to New Mexico. So it's been that kind of day.
It is. I think it's a significantly harder bracket to fill out this year than last year. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm good. I don't fill out a bracket. I haven't filled one out for several years. I'd fill it out, and it would be so bad. The upsets I picked didn't happen. The upsets I didn't pick did happen. So it was an exercise in futility and humility, and so I just gave it up.
It's true, but I've been in this bracket group for probably 15 years now, and I didn't win it for the first like 12 years, but I've won two of the last three. So now I get so into it because, you know, there's money on the line.
Yeah, my dad had me fill out his bracket last year for his work bracket pool. Not to brag, he won.
Nice.
did he share some winnings with you?
Oh, yeah. He texted me. He was like, hey, fill this out for me, and if we win, I'll split it 50-50 with you. So I got like $50 out of it, which was nice.
Oh,
man. Got a nice tank of gas out of it.
there you go.
But now, kind of talking about why you're all listening, the Arkansas men's basketball season is over following a second round exit in the SEC tournament with an 80-66 loss to South Carolina one day after beating Vanderbilt in an overtime thriller during Wednesday night sadness at the SEC tournament. Bob, you were in Nashville first. How was it? And second, I guess, can you just talk about what you saw from Arkansas in those games?
Well, yeah, Nashville's a nice city. It's gotten really big and really expensive. But, yeah, it was fun to be there. It's always good to go to the SEC tournament. And, yeah, Arkansas, you know, I thought Vanderbilt was a good matchup for them, even though Vanderbilt had beaten them in Fayetteville. I thought, well, that's good. They won't overlook them. And you know, they fell behind, had a really bad first half. You're thinking, well, man, they're going to get swept by Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt's going to beat them for a fourth time in a row. And they'd never beaten them three times in a row until they'd beat them in Fayetteville earlier this year. And you think, wow, this is just really – as bad as this season's been, this is going to be just a brutal ending. And give Arkansas credit, they rallied and took the lead in the second half by 8 with about 2 minutes left. You think, well, okay, they won this game. And then – they had a bad turnover at the end, and Vanderbilt tied it up and sent it to overtime. You're thinking, wow, you know, Vandy's got all the momentum. But give Arkansas credit. They regrouped in overtime just like they had after halftime, and they won the game, I guess, 90-85. Caleb Battle really took over, had 7 of their 12 points. And so everybody was feeling good. You know, the locker rooms are open at the SEC tournament, which is cool because they're not open any other time during the year. They're also open during the NCAA tournament. So you get a little – extra color. You get to talk to some different guys, not just the guys that come to the interview room. So that was good. Everybody's feeling good. And I thought they had a decent shot at South Carolina because I think when you win that first game, you have some momentum against a team that had a bye and hadn't played. Now, if you get to that third day and you're playing a team with a double bye, that's very rough. But I thought they had a legitimate shot to beat South Carolina. I'm not saying I would have picked them, but I thought they had a puncher's chance, whatever you call that. And they stayed with them for most of the first half. And then South Carolina got the lead, 3-point lead halftime, then really put it on them in the second half and just was much more physical, scored 52 points in the paint. Arkansas only got 10 free throws, which they can't win doing that because they average about 27 free throws a game. But so it was kind of a merciful ending to the season. Obviously North Carolina State showed you can win 5 games in 5 days, so credit to the Wolfpack. But the way it was with Arkansas, I think probably everybody was just ready for the season to end.
Yeah, I know you mentioned the Wolf Pack. My uncle's a big NC State fan, so shout out Uncle Steve. but you kind of mentioned it, this season kind of came to a merciful end for Arkansas. Not a great year. Started the season ranked in the top 15 in both the AP and coaches polls. I guess can you just talk a little bit about, you know, maybe something you can take from the season that is maybe a positive to build on going into the off season. You know, is it Caleb Battle and Tremont Mark? Is it nothing? You know, what do you think?
Well, it really depends on who comes back. You know, I talked to some of the guys. You know, Caleb Battle has a couple years of eligibility. Caleb Battle has 1 year. Tremont Mark has a couple. Devo Davis, you know, he went through senior day. He still has some eligibility left. And, but I have no, you know, basically I asked guys, hey, do you know your plans? And I don't blame anybody. They said, hey, the season just ended. We're not sure. I talked to Trevin Brazil, who, you know, after missing some games with his knee soreness, came back and played. I thought he played really well against Alabama. Really helped him out against Vanderbilt. Had 13 points and 12 boards and, I think, 3 blocks. And against South Carolina, he hit 2 threes right out of the gate. And Arkansas jumped out to, I think, an 11-3 lead. But then Trevin got 2 fouls with, I think, over 15, almost 16 minutes left of the half. He sat out the rest of the half, and then the second half, he just kind of, you know, lost his groove. And but Trevin's a guy who I think will, if he goes in the draft, I think he'll probably be a second-round pick because he's 6'10", he shoots threes, he runs the floor. You know, some people projected him before the season as a first-round pick, but the season just didn't work out like that for him. But I still think he'd be picked pretty high, or he'd be picked somewhere, probably the second round based on his potential. So he's got some decisions to make. Do I go in the draft? You know, he's had some injuries. Does he come back and try to raise his stock? But then he risks injury. And it almost seems like the older you are in college, the less the NBA teams are interested because, oh, that guy's 22, man. He's over the hill. They want the 20-year-olds, the 19-year-olds. And so, you know, Trevin's got a decision to make. The other guys that have eligibility left, you know, they might go somewhere else. They might come back. They might think about playing overseas or – you're trying to make an NBA roster, maybe as a free agent or a late first round, late second round pick or something. So there's not anybody on the team that you could name that I would say, yeah, that guy's definitely coming back. I feel good, you know, betting money that guy's going to be back. There's not anybody. I think somebody will probably be back, one or two guys, but there may not be any. So it's really hard to project the future. And obviously, Eric Musselman and his staff are recruiting the portal like crazy right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just kind of looking back on the season as a whole, I guess, can you just talk about when did you maybe start to see things were going south? When did it kind of sink in that, you know, Arkansas always kind of has this mid-season lull but always bounces back? When did you kind of feel like, okay, maybe they're not going to bounce back this time?
Well, certainly losing at home to North Carolina Greensboro was a red flag. That was early. I think that was the 4th game before they went to the Bahamas. And then they didn't play great over there. They beat Stanford in double overtime. Then they lost to a pretty solid Memphis team who was ranked much or some of the year, but isn't now. And they lost, obviously, a really good North Carolina team when they had the lead at halftime and couldn't hold it. Then they, and so you're thinking, wow, you know, at that point, I think they're 4-3. And you're thinking, man, this isn't where we thought they'd be. And then they beat Duke. And so you thought, okay, well, they've ridden the ship. But then as the season went on, certainly when they got blasted at home by Auburn, and Auburn's a very good team, as they've shown, you know, winning the SEC tournament and being, I think they're a number 2 seed, Auburn, maybe a 3 seed.
They're a 4.
Okay, well, I think they're undervalued.
I did too.
I think it won't surprise me if Auburn wins that region, gets the Final Four. But yeah, when Auburn came in here, no disgrace to lose to Auburn, but to lose them by 32, and really you felt like Auburn could have beaten them worse than that if they'd wanted to. And that's when I kind of knew, wow, you know, this is not, you know, I don't think this is going to be a very good season for the Hogs because they got blasted. And then, of course, they had a bunch of other lopsided losses. And they rallied some, swept the Aggies. Played better. You know, they lost twice to Kentucky, but those were both competitive games. So they had their moments. But I thought Trevin Brazil in the locker room after the South Carolina loss there in Nashville summed it up. He just said they just never found a groove together, and it was hard to put a finger on why. Tremont Mark just said something like, hey, that's basketball. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it happens in life. I mean, things don't turn out the way you hoped. I thought Caleb Battle had a really interesting comment. They brought him to the postgame, you know, press conference. It's on video and everything with Eric Musselman. And I asked him about South Carolina. I didn't ask him about Arkansas. I said something like, why do you think, you know, what impressed you about South Carolina today? Or why were they able to win like that? And he basically said they played together. They played like a team. I think we have just as much talent as anybody, but they play like a team. I'm paraphrasing there a little bit, but to me, reading between the lines, it was like he was saying we don't play like a team. Mm-hmm. Like we don't share the ball enough or we're unselfish. And maybe I'm not meaning to put words in anybody's mouth, but I thought that was pretty telling. I've seen that make the rounds on social media. He didn't, you know, throw his teammates under the bus or anything. And you know, he always, when he's had good games, he's always credited his teammates and everything. But it just seemed like they just never had good chemistry. They weren't connected offensively. They especially weren't connected defensively. And, you know, I think that, you know, sometimes a team's parts are better, you know, the sum, you know, everybody together better than individuals. This is probably a team that had some pretty good individuals, and they just never really came together as a team.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of the causes kind of there of, you know, a disappointing season for the Razorbacks. Kind of looking at some of the other ones, you mentioned, you know, the recruiting, maybe some of the guys just were better as individuals than they were as a team. What were maybe some of the other causes that you kind of see, you know, for, you know, Arkansas maybe having, you know, a bad season? Is it the SEC maybe being a better league than expected this season, a combination of things? I guess kind of what are your thoughts there?
Well, they did play a very tough schedule. You look at the SEC, they got eight teams in the tournament. Now, the funny thing is like last year, Arkansas went 7-11 in the SEC, but I think 11 of their games were against teams that made the tournament. The SEC schedule is unbalanced. You know, last year playing Missouri twice was tough because Missouri won 25 games and went to the NCAA tournament second round. This year playing Missouri was a godsend because they went 0-19 against SEC teams, including the tournament loss to Georgia where they couldn't hold a lead.
Academic powerhouse, Missouri.
That's right. And so, but this year the SEC was very good again. And then they played, you know, North Carolina, Memphis, Oklahoma. I know Oklahoma didn't make the tournament, but I think they would have. I think that they were lost out to some of those bid stealers, as we call them. So they played a very tough schedule. That was part of it. And defensively, and Eric Musselman would tell you this repeatedly, they could not guard the dribble drive. It was really hard to stop penetration. And they got better guarding the three near the end of the year for the most part. But, you know, when you can't stop dribble drives and you don't guard the three very well for much of the year, I mean, that doesn't really leave a lot. Their transition defense wasn't very good. Their shot selection was bad, which people might think, well, how does that lead to bad defense? Well, what happens is you miss, you know, too many threes or you take some wild shots and nobody's getting back. And those bad shots lead to runouts and uncontested points and fast break points. And Arkansas did a better job of that later in the season because I think that their shot selection improved. But, you know, they had a lot of issues, but I'd say defensively was the biggest thing. Like when they lost to Vanderbilt at home, they lost 85-82, and they had a stretch of where they hit 1 of 19, closing the half at 1 of 17 and starting the second half 0 of 2. But they scored 82 points. But they gave up 85 points to a team that averages about 66. And I think I'm right about this. Vanderbilt shot over 50% twice this season. Both times were against Arkansas. And so, and they hit some, Vanderbilt shot the ball well in Nashville, and they hit a lot of shots running down the clock to end each half. You know, they sent it to overtime with kind of a, you know, a floater and the same way with the first half. But, you know, Arkansas had a plethora of problems, but I would say at the top of the list would be defense.
Yeah, and now kind of shifting into maybe some individuals, maybe giving a title that maybe not is, maybe isn't that deserved. But who's your Arkansas men's basketball player of the year? Is it Tremont Mark, Caleb Battle? Maybe even throw a Makai Mitchell in there. What are we thinking there?
Well, they all had their moments. I mean, Makai really played well down the stretch. Played the best ball of his career probably the last dozen games. Had, you know, scored well. Rebounded well, blocked shots, hit free throws. Tremont Mark ended up being their leading scorer, but he was held to 2 points against South Carolina. had a rough game, and, you know, the Gamecocks did a good job with him. I guess I'd have to say Caleb Battle, just because of the way he scored down the stretch. You know, what just – you know, he had that crazy three-game stretch where he had 42, 36, 34. Then I think of the next game he had 29. But I think the last nine games he averaged 26.7 points. And he got off to a good start as their sixth man. I think he averaged 16.4 the first 10 games. Then he got, you know, an Eric Musselman's doghouse, I guess is a good way to put it, because he didn't play at all at home against A&M. He had several other games where he played, you know, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, you know, a couple 15. And then he caught fire at the end. He seemed to buy in more defensively. I think that got him more court time. The more he played, the better he scored. And he was rebounding well. So I would just say for that great stretch he had to end the season, I'd have to say Caleb Battle.
And with that, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, Blake is going to give us through one final rendition of Stump the Bob for the season. And believe me when I say you do not want to miss that. We will be right back. Thanks for sticking around.
Get the latest breaking news on all Arkansas Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Our award-winning reporters and photographers go beyond game recaps to bring our subscribers the most trusted Razorbacks news anywhere. With expert analysis, the latest in recruiting, plus unique and compelling stories of your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com.
We are back. Thank you for sticking around and hanging out with us. We are ready for Stump the Bob one final time. Blake, take us away.
All right, Bob, you started off this season slow, but you've gotten, I think, six straight correct answers on Stump the Bob. So you've really ended on a hot streak, but let's see if you can get one last one. So
you still got the little floating points, too.
Still have the side points in your back pocket. We'll see if you need to use those. So this is the first – well, let me back up. Arkansas is going to finish with a losing season this year. The last time Arkansas had a losing record to end the season, who did they lose to in the SEC tournament?
I believe it was the Florida Gators.
Unfortunately, that is incorrect. The last losing season they had was under John Pelfrey in 2009, 2010, and they lost to Georgia in the SEC tournament.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But don't feel bad. You still ended with a
– I was thinking of the 08-09 season in Tampa. I was getting my seasons mixed up. Mm.
Well, we won't hold it against you. You've done really well this season. You finished with a winning record. I think your final score was 6-4, so – it's something to be proud about.
I think you got to add the floating points now too, right?
Yeah, we'll go ahead and add those in. So then your final record will be 8-4. So that's
that's pretty solid.
Probably good enough to get in the Music City Bowl or something like that.
Yeah, I think it'd be good enough to get you like a probably like a 4 seed in the tournament. But like you mentioned earlier, I think giving you a 4 seed would probably be underseeding you, kind of like Auburn was. I was shocked to see them as a 4. So maybe we'll give you a 3 seed.
Auburn playing as a 4 seed, playing against some nerds in Yale. I'm a big Ivy League fan. I love some nerd ball.
Did you watch? Did you see the end of that Brown Yale game?
Yes, that was crazy.
I felt so bad for Brown.
I felt terrible for Brown. I mean, and James Jones, the Yale coach, after the game, I mean, he said, "Yeah, we took that one away, that we shouldn't have won that game." But I came into the season thinking Yale was going to win that league. So not to pat myself on the back too much, but nerd ball connoisseur.
Yeah, it would have been nice for Brown. I think that their record was like 13-18 or something like that. It wasn't good.
They knocked off Princeton, who mm-hmm. I think, you know, the Ivy League didn't used to play a tournament. They were sort of the holdout that, hey, we're going to send our regular season champion, and that way you always got the best team, whether it was Harvard, Yale, Princeton a lot of times, Penn and Princeton have probably been the heavyweights of the Ivy League for the last, you know, 40 years or whatever, with some other teams in there. But yeah, I mean, you know, those Ivy League guys, I mean, they're smart. They play unselfishly. They're usually really good passers and good back cutters and hit free throws. And I remember in 1990 when Arkansas made the Final Four, they beat Princeton in the opener. It was a tough game. You know, Pete Carrell was a Hall of Fame coach. And, yeah, don't sleep on the Ivy.
Yeah, I mean, Princeton just last year beat academic powerhouse Missouri in the second round.
What a matchup that was. I mean, you have to ask yourself, which is the higher-ranked academic school, Princeton or Missouri? I think Princeton likes to call themselves the Missouri of the East. And so, that was an academic powerhouse, and what a powerhouse matchup that was.
Yeah.
I need a second. Oh, man. Never forget that Cornell run to the Sweet 16 in 2013. No more Ivy League talk. Of course, now the season is over for Arkansas, which means the transfer portal is upon us. We've seen three Arkansas players to this point at the time of recording kind of announce their intentions of entering the portal. Those are Joseph Pinion, Denijay Harris, and Keon Menafield. Five others have exhausted their eligibility, and like we mentioned earlier, we don't know if Caleb Battle or Devo Davis are going to be back for their last years of eligibility. Long story short, we're going to see a very different Arkansas men's basketball roster next season. First, Bob, I guess, what do you think should be the focal point in recruiting the portal this offseason? Should it be players from running programs or any positions you think need addressing in particular? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'd like to see him get some players that can play defense. I know you got to score to win, but you look at some of Eric Musselman's past teams, and they brought in some very good scorers, obviously, like J.D. Notte and Jimmy Witt and people like that. But Trey Wade, he was a glue guy, a defensive player. Now, he had an incredible game against Gonzaga. I think he scored 15. I'm sure Gonzaga did not have him that high on the scouting report, but he was a glue guy, played a lot of defense. Audis Tony played good defense, a transfer from Pitt. Some other guys. So I'd like to see him get some guys that maybe are going to be defensive first guys and just kind of defensive dogs, whatever the players call them these days. I think they need some good size, and that goes to defense too, being able to protect the rim and get some rebounds. And I think this year they might have had too many guys that were scoring you want guys to score. You got to score to win, right? But I think they might have had too many alpha dogs from a scoring standpoint, and that led to what some guys might have perceived as some selfish play or not sharing the ball enough. I'm sure the guys did what they thought was best for the team, but I'd like to see some more defense. Think about defense first in some cases.
Yeah, and obviously they're going to be, assuming everybody on the current roster returns, they're going to be pretty thin. In the forward line, obviously Trevin Brazil and Bayfall, if I'm not mistaken, are the only forwards who have eligibility remaining on the Arkansas roster. I guess when you say you want defense, I guess you're looking for guys to protect the rim and stuff along those lines in that kind of position.
And stop the dribble drive. They cannot keep letting guys get to the rim and finishing or getting and ones or getting fouled and getting free throws. I mean, they gotta protect those driving lanes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I also kind of think maybe getting in an experienced point guard as well.
Point guard would be, you thought Menafield was the answer and he had some good games. Now he's in the portal. And, you thought L. Ellis was maybe the answer, and L. had some good games. But overall, it's like talking to L. after the game the other day. He just talked about how they were just so up and down, really didn't consistently do anything well. They had games where they did this well or that well, but they didn't consistently, they didn't really have anything to hang their hat on, whether that was hitting threes, out rebounding teams like A&M could do that. They did get to the free throw line a lot. That helped them win some games or stay in some games, but they just didn't really have a good identity, I didn't think.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the portal is a crazy place. There's already over 200 men's basketball players who have entered the portal, and it just opened yesterday at the time of recording. I guess when you look at the craziness of it and the success Arkansas has had in recruiting in the portal since Eric Musselman came in, I guess, can you just talk about why you think it is that they've had that kind of success? Is it talent identification, seeing how guys would fit in certain spots? What do you think has made them successful in portal recruiting?
Well, of course, Eric was one of the first guys to really take advantage of the portal back when he was in Nevada, and that's before you could have immediate eligibility. He had the Martin twins and Jordan Caroline and some other good players in Nevada that helped them go to three straight NCAA tournaments and a Sweet 16 run there in, I guess, 2018. And so I think one thing, Eric, they just work it hard. You know, he's got a lot of staff. You know, he's got the assistants, but he's also got a lot of other staff guys. And I think they do a really good job in scouting when they're scouting opponents, and then that bleeds over into scouting, you know, guys in the portal. And some of these guys they're looking at are guys they've already played, you know. And so I think they really work it hard. I think guys see the success they've had with transfers this past year, notwithstanding he does have a good track record with transfers and going, you know, six straight NCAA tournament bids this year. It didn't work out, but, you know, 2 years ago, North Carolina made it to the championship game. Last year, they didn't go to the tournament. UCLA's was under 500, I think, didn't go to the tournament. You know, obviously Louisville's been horrible the last couple of years, but those are still top programs. And even though Arkansas had a bad year, I still think it's a top program. And even though this Eric Musselman's first losing year in 9 years as a coach, I think he's still a top-flight coach. This year, it didn't work. But he certainly has a track record with transfers and getting them to the NCAA tournament, helping them get to either the NBA or playing overseas, you know, getting paid to play basketball. He has contacts everywhere. And so I think that all those things, you know, work together. And I think they certainly can sell playing time to guys because they're going to turn that roster over big time. I mean, even more maybe than in the past. We say, oh, God, 8, 9 newcomers. They might have 12, 13 newcomers. I mean, I don't know if anybody's coming back. I mean, somebody might, probably will, but there's nobody I feel good about saying, well, that guy's definitely coming back. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity to play, and I think they're very good at showing a guy, okay, here's what you did at the school you're at. Here's what you can do for us. Here's what we can help you do. We can help you expand your game, you know, whether that's a perimeter player, an inside guy, or a point guard or whatever. You know, Stanley Amude, who's played in the NBA with the Pistons, he wasn't drafted. He was a great player at South Dakota. Obviously, a mid-major, came here, and he scored okay. He averaged about 11 points, but he improved immeasurably as a defensive player. And as bad as Arkansas's defense was this year, Eric's teams usually are very good defensively. So I think they can sell. We can help you improve your game. We can help you get to the pros. And, you know, we can help you get to the NCAA tournament. This past year notwithstanding, to me, that's an outlier.
Yeah, and when you look at, you know, the transfer portal and everything that, you know, along those lines this year, and a lot has been made of this on social media. You got, you know, a guy like Keon Menefield coming from the Washington team that wasn't that great. Ellis came from Louisville, like we mentioned, not that great. Really, Tremont Mark, probably the withstanding transfer that from this season's team that came from a winning program. I shouldn't say good program because those are good programs, but a team that has been winning recently. I guess is that. Do you buy stock in that, or is that, I guess, yeah.
I don't think that's the be-all, end-all. I mean, you look at the past, you know, J.D. Notte came from, you know, small school Jacksonville in Florida, not the one in Alabama. You know, Justin Smith turned out to be a great player for him, and he'd played at mediocre Indiana teams that didn't make the NCAA tournament. Audis Tony, who's a really good player, especially on defense, he came from a Pitt program that had lost. You know, Trey Wade came from a Wichita State team, I think, was coming off a bad year. So, yeah, it's great to have guys that come from a winning culture, whether that's high schools or the college they were at, but I don't think it's the be-all, end-all. I think that's an easy way to look at this year and say, wow, they got guys from bad teams. They weren't used to winning. But, those guys I just named, they weren't playing. I think some of those guys were really hungry to come here and motivated to get an NCAA tournament. And obviously they wanted to, you know, promote themselves as well to get a shot to play in the pros. But I think you just got to get the right player. I think it helps if you come from a winning program, but I think it can also work to say, wow, that guy's really hungry. He wants to win. He wants to get the NCAA tournament. He's going to be very motivated to play unselfishly because he just wants to win, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and shout out all my mid-major transfers, as you all know. Big mid-major guy. And then just kind of looking at it from that point of view, I guess if you're on Eric Musselman's staff, I guess what are the characteristics you're going to be looking for for incoming transfers? It obviously you mentioned the defense, but is it guys who are, you know, winning? Is it guys who are ball dominant, or is it, you know, in your face defense? What do you kind of think?
Well, probably a variety. I mean, you're right. I think they need a point guard, a pass first point guard, a guy that really knows how to run the show. I think they need to get guys that are certainly good on defense. I mean, you want two-way players. You want guys that can score and play defense. But I don't think they have to sit there and say, well, we got to get four guys that scored 20 points at their old schools. If they did, that's great. But I think you got guys that you feel are going to buy in, that are going to play unselfishly. That can be hard to do because, you know, it's not like a high school kid that you're maybe recruited for 2 or 3 years. This is a guy you maybe recruit for 2 or 3 weeks. Now, you can make a lot of calls and ask people. You can check with his high school coach or his AU coach, or depending on your relationship, you might be able to talk to his current coach. You know, a lot of times if a guy's leaving a mid-major and to go up to like an SEC or Big Ten school, their coach hopefully understands. Just like the coaches do it, you know, players can do it too. Like, you know, Stanley Amuda, he's another guy, you know, that was very hungry. He scored 1,500 points at South Dakota, and they're playing the NCAA tournament. I believe he played for Todd Lee there at South Dakota. Todd Lee and Muss are great friends, coached together in the CBA in Rapid City, and now Todd Lee's on Eric's staff. But certainly, you know, Eric got a very good scouting report from Todd Lee about Stanley Amuda, and he played 4 years in South Dakota. So, you know, and he scored, you know, like say 1,500 points. So he did his stuff for South Dakota, and so he gets a chance to play at Arkansas. And but he'd never played in the NCAA tournament. So I think guys like him and Tony were really hungry. They basically need some guys like that. They need some guys like Stanley Amuda, like Aldis Toney, like Trey Wade. Jalen Tate was a guy who'd played in the NCAA tournament, but he came from Northern Kentucky, so he was hungry to play at a big school. You know, Jimmy Witt was back for a second tour duty at Arkansas from SMU. I think they need guys that are hungry, unselfish. Some are, you know, have a scoring mentality, but some that have a defensive mentality first.
And with that is all of the time we have. Thank you all for following along with the Bad Basketball Podcast in Mid-America, not the Bad Basketball Podcast in Mid-America. Though I guess you could make the point that it was the Bad Basketball Podcast in Mid-America.
This season for a lot of games it was.
No, but thank you all for listening in all season. You know, I was only here for part of it, but thank you all for tuning in, the warm welcomes and everything along those lines from myself, Anthony Christensen, Bob Holt to my right, Blake Sutton behind the scenes. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you, I guess, next season.